If you actually stop just for a second and look at the sheer scale of the invisible infrastructure running your life right now,
Yeah.
it's frankly staggering.
It really is.
I mean, we are talking about a technology that is at this exact moment deciding which movie pops up on your Netflix homepage, calculating if you qualify for a mortgage, regulating traffic in downtown Stockholm.
And in a much darker context, determining whether a missile launch sequence should even be initiated.
It's the full spectrum of human existence, from the totally trivial, like finding a date for Friday.
To the completely existential national defense.
Exactly. And here's a tension I really want to unpack today. It's something that I think once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Okay.
For a very long time, the intellectual framework we use to govern this massive, sprawling silicon intelligence, it wasn't.
It was a huge translation error that lasted for decades. And that really brings us to the core of our deep dive today. We're looking at a very specific moment in history, the year 2019.
The breaking point.
This is the moment the field of AI ethics effectively fractured. It was the year we really had to decide, do we keep trying to adapt these old biomedical rules, or do we invent a new native language for machine intelligence?
So we have the history, we have the philosophy, and we even have the bureaucratic receipts from the European Union. But before we get to that split, we have to understand the legacy. Why, of all things, did computer scientists look at medicine and say, yep, that's the model we want?
Well, it makes a certain kind of sense if you look at the stakes involved, especially in the early days.
Okay.
Researchers looked around for another field that dealt with high stakes, life or death decision making on behalf of another person. And the closest parallel was biomedicine. You have a professional, the doctor or the coder, making these obscure technical interventions that the subject, the patient or the user, doesn't fully understand, but which have a huge impact on their life.
It's the power dynamic. I have no idea how a triple bypass works, just like I have no idea how a loan denial algorithm works. I just have to trust the expert.
Precisely. So they adopted the gold standard of that era. In 1985, two thinkers, Beauchamp and Childress, published their Principles of Biomedical Ethics.
And this is still the standard.
Oh, yeah. If you walk into any hospital in the West today, the ethics committee is probably running on these four engines.
Okay, let's break those down because this is the source code we tried to run on AI, and
Yeah.
I want to understand why they eventually failed. What are the four pillars?
So first, you have autonomy. In a hospital, that's patient rights, the right to refuse treatment, informed consent, that sort of thing.
Got it.
Second is non-maleficence. This is the Hippocratic Oath. Primum non nocere. First, do no harm.
Which seems simple enough. Don't kill the patient.
Right. Third is justice. This usually means the fair distribution of scarce resources, like who gets a kidney transplant or an ICU bed.
Okay.
And finally, beneficence, which is the active duty to act for the good of the patient, not just to avoid harming them.
All right. So up until very recently, this was the toolkit. If you were an ethicist at a tech company, you were trying to port these four medical ideas into software. But this is where I get stuck. Do no harm works when you're a surgeon operating on one person.
Yes.
An algorithm doesn't operate on one person.
And that is exactly where the friction starts. I mean, think about the architecture of a doctor's visit. It is a one-to-one interaction.
A closed room.
Exactly. You have a human doctor, a human patient. The feedback loop is immediate. If the doctor gives you a pill and you turn green, they stop.
Right. It's contained.
So the principle of non-maleficence, do no harm, is relatively easy to monitor in that context. But now, port that to an algorithm. An AI isn't treating one person.
No, it's optimizing a feed for 10 million people simultaneously.
So do no harm becomes a statistical nightmare.
How so?
Well, if an algorithm harms, say, 0.01% of users, maybe it shows them content that triggers depression. But it helps or entertains the other 99.9%.
Yeah.
Has it done harm?
Technically, yes to that small group.
But in engineering terms, that's a wildly successful error rate. The medical code didn't have a variable for acceptable collateral damage at scale.
Wow. That is a terrifying distinction. A doctor can't say, well, I killed one patient, but I cured 1,000, so my stats are great.
But a model developer can say that.
And they do.
They say it all the time. It's called accuracy. And this is why that translation layer was so messy. They tried to map justice onto fairness in algorithms, making sure a hiring bot isn't biased.
And non-maleficence.
That became prevention of harm, which covers everything from self-driving car accidents to data leaks.
What about autonomy? That one seems like the hardest one to map onto tech.
That morphed into human agency. The idea that you shouldn't be manipulated by a system without your consent. But this is where the linguistics get just fascinating. There's this struggle to find a word for the transparency of the system.
Like how the doctor explains the diagnosis?
Or how the AI explains its decision, yeah.
Okay, I have to stop you here because I actually laughed out loud at this part of the research. We have to talk about the explicability crisis.
Oh, the linguists are still mad about this one.
It's so petty, but it matters so much. Yeah. So the source points out that for years, computer scientists were using the word explainability. We need explainability in our models.
Right, which, you know, strictly speaking, isn't a word.
It's not in the dictionary. The actual English word is explicability. But Silicon Valley looked at explicability and said,
yeah, that sounds too much like a philosophy professor.
It sounds academic, it sounds rigid, and tech wants to sound accessible.
So they just, they bullied the English language until explainability became the standard term.
But there's a deeper point here, right? It wasn't just about grammar. It was about who gets to define the rules.
It is a perfect example of an industry forcing language to bend to its will. But if you look at the 2019 documents, you still see explicability fighting for its life. It's a small detail, but it just highlights the friction of trying to force a new technology into an old way of speaking.
And that friction leads us right to the breakpoint. You said 2019 was the year this all came to a head. Why did the biomedical model finally break? What happened?
It was the ubiquity problem. The scope of biomedicine is, by definition, constrained. It happens in hospitals, clinics, research centers.
Right. You don't have a biomedical interaction when you pick a movie.
Exactly. Or when you drive to work.
Yeah.
Medicine is episodic. But AI began to proliferate through experience itself. By 2019, AI was everywhere.
It was in our dating profiles, our bank accounts.
Recommender systems, social media feeds. It wasn't just about life and death in the surgical sense anymore. It was about the very texture of daily life.
So because it seeped into the quotidian, the everyday stuff, the do no harm rule just felt insufficient.
Totally. Do no harm is a pretty low bar for a system that curates your entire social reality. So a second group of thinkers emerged.
The second vector.
Right. And they argued that we needed a ground-up approach, a set of principles crafted specifically for information engineering, breaking free from the medical history entirely. We needed a native language for AI ethics.
And this is where the European Union enters the chat. They published the ethics guidelines for trustworthy AI in 2019. And looking at this document, it seems like a classic case of bureaucratic compromise.
It is the ultimate bureaucratic solution to a philosophical stalemate. You had two camps, the biomedical traditionalists and the new information engineering radicals.
And instead of picking one,
the EU decided to include both.
They just printed both lists, yeah. Seriously.
Essentially, yes. If you look at that 2019 guideline, they list the four biomedical principles we just discussed: autonomy, prevention of harm, fairness, and yes, explicability. But then, right alongside them, they list seven new key requirements.
And these are the new native ones?
Correct. These include things like diversity, societal and environmental well-being, and accountability.
Things that don't really map to a doctor's office.
Right. A doctor doesn't usually have to worry about the environmental well-being of prescribing an antibiotic. But an AI engineer training a huge language model absolutely has to worry about the carbon footprint of all that compute power.
This shift really shows that we aren't just checking code for bugs anymore. We're evaluating it for values. And I want to pause on that word, values. Because the source makes a really interesting distinction here about what ethics actually is. It's not just a feeling, it's a vocabulary.
Yes, ethics is a language. It's the vocabulary of human values. And to understand that language, you have to distinguish between two types of goods, intrinsic and instrumental.
Let's unpack that. Instrumental is the easy one, right?
Right. Instrumental values are things we want because they get us something else. Money is the classic example. You don't want the paper itself. You want what it can buy. It's an instrument.
And intrinsic values.
Those are things that have value on their own. Dignity, privacy, freedom. You don't want privacy so you can get something else. You want privacy because it's fundamental to your sense of self. It's the end, not the means.
So when we talk about evaluation in AI, we're not talking about like unit testing. We aren't asking, does this code compile?
No. Evaluation in the ethical sense is the act of giving value to these abstract concepts within the system itself.
I really want to slow down and look at the classroom example from the reading because I think it just perfectly crystallizes this problem of values versus variables.
The information engineering scenario, it's a great case study.
Right. So picture this. You walk into a classroom, every student's wearing a headset. This device scans their brain waves in real time to measure attention.
It's designed to tell the teacher who's listening and who's, you know, spacing out.
So, put on your engineer hat. Your job is objectively verifiable. You ask technical questions. Does the Bluetooth connect? Is the latency okay? Can we detect a beta wave?
These are true-false questions.
Yeah.
The code either works or it doesn't. The sensor picks up the wave or it misses it.
Exactly. But now put on your ethicist hat. You have to ask a completely different set of questions using that language of values.
You have to ask, is it right to quantify the daydreaming of a 12-year-old?
Or even deeper, does a student have the freedom to be bored?
That's the intrinsic value of mental privacy. The engineer asks, is the data accurate? The ethicist has to ask, is the data just? And the problem is, the algorithm is great at answering the first question, and it's completely incapable of even understanding the second.
Because you can't write a unit test for dignity.
You can try. You can try to proxy it. You can say, well, we'll encrypt the data. That addresses the security variable, but it doesn't address the fundamental loss of autonomy that comes from being constantly monitored.
And does the code know the difference? That's the really scary part. The algorithm can optimize for attention, but it has no concept of dignity.
That is the crux of the problem. A machine can optimize for a variable. It cannot optimize for a value unless we translate that value into a variable. And something is always lost in that translation. When you turn freedom into a metric, you usually just end up with choice architecture or something that isn't quite freedom anymore.
So bringing this back to our timeline, we had the split in 2019. The EU pasted both lists together, the medical list and the new native list. Who won? It's been a few years.
The native AI vector has decisively won the debate.
Mm-hmm.
The second side prevailed.
Why? Was it just the ubiquity thing?
It's the scope. The medical model was just too narrow.
Mm.
Today, AI connects the quotidian, those trivial daily choices like which restaurant Google Maps suggests to the systemic, like who gets access to banking or how we manage airspace.
From Netflix to missiles.
Exactly. Because it impacts everything, the community realized they required that distinct set of 7 to 11 principles. Do no harm just wasn't granular enough to handle a technology that shapes social credit scores and insurance premiums at the same time.
It's interesting that you mentioned the systemic nature, because when we talk about something like social well-being, one of those new native principles, it sounds great on paper.
Of course. Who could be against it?
But when you actually have to code that, it gets really messy, doesn't it?
It gets incredibly messy. And this is where the winner of the debates, this new set of principles, actually hands us a much harder problem.
Mm-hmm.
In the medical model, the patient is the clear priority.
The doctor acts for the patient.
But in the AI model, you often have competing stakeholders, values that crash into each other.
Can you give us an example of that where two good values are in conflict?
Sure. Think about the trade-off between social well-being and privacy or autonomy. We see this all the time in smart city designs.
Okay.
Let's go back to that Stockholm traffic example. Say you want to optimize traffic flow to reduce emissions and prevent accidents. That's social well-being and prevention of harm.
Sounds good. Everyone wants fewer accidents and cleaner air.
But to do that really effectively, to truly optimize the flow, you might need to track the real-time location and driving habits of every single car with extreme precision. You need to know that you specifically are driving to the grocery store at 6 p.m. and that your neighbor is driving to the gym.
So my personal privacy and my autonomy, my right to move through the world unseen, are directly at war with the social well-being of the city.
Exactly. And unlike a doctor who can consult a patient and say, hey, this has a side effect, do you want to proceed? The algorithm has to make that trade-off in milliseconds, millions of times a day, without ever asking you.
So the EU's compromise in 2019 gave us a list of principles, but it didn't give us a hierarchy. It didn't tell us which value wins when they collide.
No. And that's the terrifying part of the evaluation process we talked about. We're giving these systems values, but we haven't decided how much weight each value has.
And we're often hiding that weighting process inside the black box of the machine learning model.
Right. We say the system is optimizing for efficiency, but what we're really saying is, we have decided to de-weight individual privacy by 15% in exchange for a 5% increase in traffic throughput.
But we don't say it that clearly. We just say the traffic is better.
We hide the ethical calculus behind the technical result. And that is why this whole shift from 1985 ethics to 2019 ethics matters so much. It wasn't just updating a handbook. It was acknowledging that we are building systems that make moral trade-offs on a planetary scale.
So if we look back at this journey from the hospital wards of 1985 to the digital infrastructure of the EU in 2019, it feels like we've successfully identified the right words. We know we need to talk about diversity and fairness and agency. We've built the vocabulary.
We have the vocabulary, yes. We've moved past the clumsy translation of medical ethics. We know that explainability is critical, even if the linguists hate the word. We acknowledge that AI is a unique thing that needs its own native laws.
But knowing the words isn't the same as writing the sentence.
No. The challenge now isn't defining the values. It's prioritizing them. It's about implementation. The second vector won the war of definition, but the war of application. That's just starting.
And that application is happening in real time. This isn't a thought experiment in a philosophy class anymore. It's happening every single time you unlock your phone.
It is. And the most critical realization for anyone listening, whether you're a developer, a policymaker, or just someone living in this ecosystem, is that these algorithms are not neutral. Every line of code that touches human data is an ethical stance. It's a vote for one value over another.
Which brings us to a final thought for you to chew on. We've talked about how the industry has shifted and how we've moved from do no harm to these complex lists of requirements. But let's make this personal for a moment.
We want to leave you with a direct challenge. We want you to imagine you are the architect of one of these systems.
Imagine you're programming the algorithm that regulates traffic or maybe a social credit system, and you reach that point of conflict we just discussed. You find you must sacrifice one intrinsic value to save another.
If you must choose between the privacy of the individual driver, their right to move unseen, their dignity as a free agent, and the social well-being of the city's safety, the ability to prevent a collision or a crime, which variable do you de-weight?
And then ask yourself this. Does your code know the difference between a variable and a value? Or is it just optimizing for whatever you told it to care about?
That's the decision the human has to make. The machine can't make it for you.
That's it for this deep dive. Thanks for listening.